Anytime I worry, I give a small thing a big shadow. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Anytime I worry, I give a small thing a big shadow. This morning I had a very fascinating dream. I dreamt I was in a position to speak to teachers from poor schools and rich schools. And as I was talking to these teachers, I was listening as they were telling me their problems, telling me the difficulties they had in teaching students. And I was sitting on the ground with a fellow, a very pleasant looking fellow, and he was sitting next to me and he took his pants off. And when he took his pants off, he had another pair of pants underneath there, but it only was over one leg, because the other leg was a prosthesis. It was a sort of a wooden leg, and he wanted me to feel sorry for him. He wanted me to feel sorry for his handicap, and so I said to him, you know, I wouldn't have even known you had a prosthesis, that you had a wooden leg, if you hadn't showed me the leg was there, because you act like a normal person, you walk like a normal person, you do everything like a normal person, and you wouldn't have had to show me that. Now, why did you show me that? Well, he didn't have an answer, because he knew that the answer was not correct. The answer was being sorry for himself. And he says, how can I be a good teacher if I have a wooden leg? How can I do anything, you know, if I'm at my handicap like this? And I said, well, think of this. The rich schools, they have everything. And the young people in the rich schools are exceedingly handicapped, because they're not taught to be creative. They're not taught to be imaginative. They're not taught to do anything. They're just taught to use all of this wonderful equipment that the school board can buy for them because it can afford it. Now, in the poorer schools, these students don't have a lot of these things, so they learn to treasure them. They learn to appreciate them. They learn to honor the equipment they have and take good care of it. If their teachers respect the fact that the little bit they have, they will use well. So often, we forget where education takes place. We forget that we give a worry to something that doesn't deserve a worry. We give it a big shadow. We say, because I don't have the equipment to teach with, I cannot teach. What was the figure? 35% of the children in America today are being taught at home. 35%, something like that. And that's amazing. Now, does every home have a computer? Does every home have a blackboard? Does every home have all the textbooks that the school board recommends? Does every home have all of these things that are going to be useful in helping to teach the children? No. They're going to teach the children the specific values that are most beneficial to them. They're going to teach the children those things that are going to benefit them as they grow. Now, in the rich school, the genius has objects to help him to develop his genius. And most of the time, the objects are not big enough. Most of the time, the objects are not big enough to help the genius develop his genius. Most of the time, the objects are not big enough to help the genius develop his genius. At a point in case, Bill Gates and his associate, the richest two men in the entire universe, in the world, and they dropped out of school. Why did they drop out of school? Not because they couldn't do the work, but it didn't challenge them. They had ideas and concepts that went beyond what the school would allow them to do. The school demanded them to go step by step, which is good. For basic understanding, the step by step is a very excellent way to go. But the true genius did not become the genius in school. He became the genius out of school. He went off on his own and did his own thing. Now, when he went off on his own, did his own thing, did that mean that he went contrary to society? That he went contrary to what was highest and best for him? No. He went contrary to society. Because society says, you've got to go through these 4 years of college, and you've got to go through these to get these certificates and stuff like that, because that shows that you're a capable, competent person. But these guys were capable, competent people without it. In fact, one of the men who is running as an MBA, that's a business manager, a major corporation, he received, what would you say, appreciation from the corporation in the millions. He his ideas were used. He taught classes. He taught seminars, and he was the head of the finance area of this corporation, and very excellent. And then somebody in the corporation, in doing an ordinary check, checked on where he said he went to school and what he said he had done, and he hadn't done any of those things. He had never been to school. He had never been to anything, but yet he was this fantastic person. And what did they do? They fired him. Here he was, the genius of the corporation, and just because he didn't have the certificate, they fired him, but not because he didn't have the certificate. Why did they fire him?
Because of his integrity.
Because of his integrity. If his integrity would allow him to lie, then his integrity would allow him to steal and perhaps do other things. Now, how could this man have achieved the goal he achieved without the education and risen to high levels? How could he have done it? He could get together, as Bill Gates did with Paul, his associate, and develop their own company. Develop their own company. Develop their own projects. And stand up to the fact that they don't have their MBA, that they don't have this and they don't have that. But you don't say, I don't have it. You just say, I did not finish, or whatever you want to say. But you stand up for the truth. You stand up for who you are. You stand up for your educational background and who you are. And what is it? What is it? Is the academic background so terribly important? No, it is for some things, and for other things it's not. But now, who was really handicapped? Was it the student or was it the teacher? The teacher who had a wooden leg, was he handicapped, or was the student who had a teacher who had a wooden leg, was the student handicapped? Well, the student was handicapped because the teacher would always feel insecure, would always feel that they were not all there, they were not totally there. And this is a very unfortunate thing. They make this big shadow out of nothing. Now, we saw a number of movies, and one of them, the little boy, was he couldn't hear. And so he had to go to a school where he could learn how to read sign language. And he had to learn how to read Braille and do all these things. And the teacher from the school could speak, but she didn't. She spoke, well, in a little bit, in a way she did, but she spoke to the parents in the sign language. She spoke so quickly and so definitely and so deftly, the parents were able to follow and understand what was going on. It was a beautiful thing that was going on. So this is quite interesting, what we do in the world and how we do these things. We create ourselves with having handicaps and limitations that are not really there. And I had a chance to speak to these school boards of these several schools, the rich one and the poor one, and each one I pointed out that the handicap was not the knowledge and the education that the children wanted to have, but it was that the teachers felt insufficient and inferior to sharing with the student because the teachers had handicaps. Now, when the teacher no longer has a handicap, then the teacher can teach well. Now, if you have a woman teaching school, and the woman's doing a good job, and then she and one of the male teachers have an experience together, and everybody knows about it, then what happens? Her integrity as a teacher goes right down the tube. His integrity doesn't go down, but hers does. Now, why should her integrity go down the tube because she had this experience with one of the male teachers? It goes down the tube because she doesn't believe in herself. She doesn't believe in herself. And when she doesn't believe in herself, then she cannot pass this belief through to the rest of the students that she's teaching. And that's a very important thing. Personal integrity means a great deal. Now, your personal integrity does not have to be based upon you're being good or you're being bad. It's based upon whether you believe in yourself. As Richard Bach said, if all over the world, what is said about you is not true. If you stand up for who you are, that's the thing. That's the thing. You always know who you are. Because the world is going to think things. If a man and a woman go in a hotel together and they're not related or anything else like that, people think, uh-oh, I know what's going to happen. And not necessarily. Not necessarily. And we were watching a movie the other night, and the man went into his bedroom with this woman, and the other woman, who had relationships with many men, she says, I know what you're doing in there, I know. And the guy says, yeah, what? He says, actually, she's helping me on my part for the play. And she is a very sincere and good person. And if we did do anything, that's our business. But the thing is, they weren't doing it. But you see, she was thinking they were, because she would do it. And you see, this is why when we judge other people by our own limitations, we are being very poor teachers. We're being very poor guides. And then we think that we're guiding our children onto a path of goodness and sincerity and integrity. No way. Now, do you believe in yourself? Do you believe in yourself?
Yes.
What is the most important thing that helped the people of Israel, that is of Egypt, to come out of Israel, to come out of Egypt? What was the most important thing that helped those people? What was the most important thing that helped those people? Was it Moses going over there and freeing them? Or was it their belief that Moses could free them? You see, Moses didn't really do anything. Moses was a weakling. Moses was great. I mean, you know, he walked in there where the devil would fear to tread. And he brought the people out of Egypt. But he had no army. He had no guns. He had no bombs. He had no tanks. He had nothing to help him bring the people out. He had nothing. You know, it was just a total sham. But they had belief. Now, do you hear me?
Yeah.
Belief. Belief is what does all things. When Bill Gates believed in his idea, he didn't have a lot of money. And his father wasn't feeding him and taking care of him while he's playing with his toy, because his dad didn't think he was too cool either, you know. I mean, here he goes off on this harebrained idea. Anybody in after sight can look at Bill Gates and say, man, you know, what a great guy all the way. No, he had a lot of tough times, and he had a lot of tough experiences that he had to do alone. Perhaps even his partners and friends didn't always agree with him, because even now they find it a little difficult to agree with him, because he is so one-pointed on everything he does. And being one-pointed is being a pain in the neck and everywhere else. When you're with a person who's one-pointed, that is sick. You know, can't you think of anything else but to get to the top of the mountain? No, I'm going to the top of the mountain. Can't you think of anything else? Look at the beautiful flowers along the way. Look at all the, you know, I'm going to the top of this mountain. And you say, ah, you know. And you, if you're not one-pointed, you cannot appreciate a person who is one-pointed. And there are so many people who are not one-pointed. The majority. The majority. And that's why there are few leaders. The leaders are people who are one-pointed, who have a goal in their mind and set it, and they follow it. Now, the poor people who are handicapped with no money are blessed. Because they don't have the money there to do it. They have to use their creative imagination to come up with ideas and ways of doing things. Now, you think that Michelangelo did such a great job of painting the Sistine Chapel, you know? You think that's so beautiful, so wonderful. Because you read the story and you find out it wasn't all that much fun. But Michelangelo didn't have money to buy paint. He had to go out and make it himself. He had to go out and get the stone, the rock, the clay, the stuff from the countryside. He had to get the herbs from the field, which he used to make the paint stable. He had to go do this all by himself with his staff. And they didn't give him money to do these things. And he had to make paintbrushes. They would go by the stable. And then they go by the stable, they take their knife along, and they go, tuk, and they cut off the horse's hair from his tail to use for paintbrushes. And they made their own paintbrush, and they tied a string around to keep the hairs onto the stick. Now, you didn't know these things, did you? You didn't think about these things. All you did is think, what a wonderful, beautiful painting that is, the end result. And you look at that and you say, wow, what a spiritually illumined, fabulous person that must be who has a thing like that going on. You know, how fantastic. But you see, we don't know. In his lack of money, not poverty, but in his lack of money, he was so creative that what he created remains today. What he created remains today because he listened within to know the right chemicals, the right mixtures for his paints, the right things to do. He listened within, and he followed what he heard. Now, that's genius. That you cannot teach in school. That you cannot teach anywhere. The only thing that you can teach is to follow your heart. And even that you can't teach, because people have to figure out what their heart is. And sometimes they think their heart is their emotion, and so they go after sex. Or they think their heart is beautiful women and dancing and singing and playing all the time. And so they go after nightclubbing, which is all fine and dandy. But the thing is, what is your heart? Your heart is that creative genius within you urging to come forth and be something. And you have no idea what it is. You can't, because it hasn't happened yet. But it's coming forth. Bill Gates certainly had no idea what he was working on in software. And what he was doing with the DOS and the IBM and all that other good stuff. I mean, he was working with, theoretically, some big stuff at that time. But even then, he had the wisdom to say, no, I'm going to do it myself. And then doing it himself, then it was his own personal property. And that became very wonderful. Now, you think that Mark Twain and...
Tom Sawyer.
Huh? Who?
Tom Sawyer.
Yeah, Tom Sawyer. But you think of Mark Twain, and you think of this writer in England who wrote about kids and stuff like that.
Charles Dickens.
Yeah, Charles Dickens. You think of Mark Twain and Charles Dickens as fabulous writers and fabulous men, but living in the life of luxury because they were so famous and so... They didn't have money. They didn't have money. They put on a show, but they didn't have money. And people would steal their stuff and publish it without paying them for it. And that made them very unhappy, but they liked to see it published, but they wanted some money. They didn't care that their name was on it or not on it. They wanted money. They wanted to eat. Now, you see, we don't think of that. We just look at the end result. And we don't realize the great experiences that they went through to get to that end result, which perhaps made them the fabulous writers that they were. Because Charles Dickens' writing was really a tribute to the, not a tribute so much, but a picture of what went on at that time. And it's quite interesting. So, you see, if you have a dream, if you have any kind of imagination at all, and you do, if you have genius within you that wants to come forth, well, follow it. And when I was 17, 18, I thought, gee, I'd love to be a minister. I'd love to be, speaking. But I didn't really think of it in a church. I wanted to be a minister, you know, and get out and do something. And then I thought, no, no, I'm too young. I'm too young to do that sort of thing. It's too young to begin thinking like that, you know. Even though my uncle was this and other people were that. But so I was my own worst enemy. If I had let go at that time, I would have gotten into this business a lot earlier and enjoyed it more. But who knows? Maybe all of the experiences that I've had have all led up to the type of person that I am today. If the type of person I am today is a good person, then that's beautiful. And if the type of person that Bill Gates is today, which is very wealthy, among other things, that's beautiful. But is Bill Gates a good, intelligent, caring, loving parent and a nice, sound person generally? Well, from all that we hear, yes and no. Yeah, a normal person. And the same for all these things. So, you see, it's not money or rich parents or poor parents that makes the genius. The genius is within every person. And all they have to do is to stop being concerned about the handicap of not having money and start being concerned about what ideas are going through their head and what ideas they'd like to express and what ideas they'd like to live in their life, because that's what it really is all about. And we say, anytime I worry, I give a small thing a big shadow. So anytime you worry about the lack of money, the lack of education, the lack of anything, stop worrying and stop and start thinking, what excites me? What delights me? What do I really want to work with? And then go for it. Because when you do that, then your life has meaning for the first time in your life. Anytime I worry, I give a small thing a big shadow. But anytime I reach out and follow my heart, miracles and magic take place. I love you, I love you, I love you. I love you.